This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday. Welcome to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Mellor, where we recap the weekend White Sox lore. We let you know what's going on for today's game, get you set with the upcoming week. Just everything White Sox. We're here for you. If you want to join the conversation as well, 312-332-3776. As always, fantastic holiday weekend here at the ballpark. Picturesque day here at Wrigley Field. Fabulous win last night for the White Sox over the Marlins, and they'll be out of the ballpark tomorrow celebrating Mother's Day. Already saw a couple players who received their shipment of pink cleats today inside the clubhouse, so they will be donning those tomorrow, no doubt. As I look out onto the field right now, I see several White Sox players donning the varsity sweaters that are being given away today. Josh Rojas, the ringleader amongst them, Miguel Vargas as well, sporting the sweater in warmups today for White Sox players. I did see in the clubhouse Josh Rojas was trying to talk Michael A. Taylor into donning a sweater for warmups as well. He was rebuffed on that request, but Michael A. Taylor did not rebuff our request to join us today. He'll be on the show at 4 o'clock today, so we'll bring in Michael A. Taylor, who achieved something that less than 10% of Major League Baseball players do, and that is achieve 10 years of service time in baseball. He did that this past week when he was on the roster against the Royals, has had been somewhat of a doubles machine, and of course has that gold glove caliber defense. He has been playing left, playing right, and center from time to time when Luis Robert needs a breather, which is the case today. Luis Robert's knee barking a little bit. Will Venable just told us that about 20 minutes ago. So Luis Robert, he did say it was day-to-day, so nothing to get overly concerned about. But Michael A. Taylor will be manning center field today, and he will be joining us, at least expected to, around 4 o'clock. To the big news of the day, though, and it revolves around Tim Elko. He finally got the call-up. Happy Tim Elko Day to all the White Sox fans out there. I know you've been anxiously awaiting it. It is here today. First pitch 6:10, so I don't know what you're doing, but you might want to be here today at Wrigley Field if you don't have anything already planned, because the weather is beautiful, and Tim Elko will be in the house and in the lineup, by the way. He's playing first base. He's batting eighth today. I might as well give you the entire lineup before we get to the Elko sound. Today's lineup, Chase Meidroth back in there playing shortstop. Will Venable said that his shoulder, he didn't injure it, but he hurt it on the last game of the series against the Royals. Woke up in the middle of the night, and it was bothering him a bit, so they gave him a bit of treatment yesterday, did some imaging. All looks good. Feels good today. He's back in the lineup atop it, playing shortstop. Josh Rojas, who made some really nice defensive plays yesterday at third base, back at the hot corner today, batting second. DHing will be Andrew Vaughn, something that I'm sure we're going to talk about throughout the show. He is batting third. Edgar Caro bats cleanup and catches today. Joshua Palacios, the lefty, is in right field batting fifth. Lenin Sosa bats sixth at second base today. Brooks Baldwin batting seventh in left field, the switch hitter. Tim Elko bats eighth, as I mentioned, and he plays first base today in his Major League Baseball debut. And then Michael A. Taylor, who is going to join us around 4 o'clock today, rounds out the White Sox lineup, batting ninth and playing center field. Again, Luis Robert, knee bothering him ever so slightly, but Will said he could be available off the bench if needed today, and is day-to-day. Shane Smith on the mound for the White Sox today. Again, first pitch coming your way at 6:10. We'll have the pregame coverage starting at 5:30, but we're locked and loaded for the next 2 hours before that anyway with White Sox Weekly. So feel free to jump on in and join the conversation, 312-332-3776. As I mentioned, Tim Elko takes center stage as the top storyline today here at Wrigley Field. And the White Sox social media team, as they've done all year, sent out the video of him receiving the news from Charlotte Knights manager Sergio Santos. And I'm not going to lie, each and every time we get one of these, I'm always going to bring them to you on White Sox Weekly, because every time it's happening, a player is achieving their lifelong dream, something they've worked so hard for. And so every chance we have to bring those moments to you, we are going to do it. Again, this is Sergio Santos breaking the news yesterday to Tim Elko.
Hey, I got some good news for you, pal. But before I let you, you know, give you the good news, you are one of my favorite players. The person you are, your attitude, work ethic. And like I told you earlier, like, your parents did an amazing job and you did an awesome job for yourself. So I'm like so happy, dude, to let you know you're going to be a Major League Baseball player, too.
Thank you.
Earned it, man. Like, having you the last 2 years has been amazing. I love you like my son, bro. I truly do. And so you deserve to get up there and make us proud, Timmy. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Make us proud, Timmy. Just love the enthusiasm from Sergio Santos there. And you could hear the authenticity in his voice. He truly does love and appreciate Tim Elko. And he's not the only one. Virtually every teammate is a huge fan of Tim Elko. And he's somebody who I think a lot of people in the organization are rooting for. 26-year-old 10th round pick who has made it this far. And this in itself, making it to the major leagues, I think is a huge win for the organization. What they've been able to do with Tim Elko as a developmental player is huge. And he's done a lot of work. Tim Elko has. He has talked about extensively working on shrinking the zone, the pitches he wants to attack, specifically making sure that he's going after pitches that he can do damage on. And clearly, he did a lot of work over the winter. The White Sox have, as an organization, have put a lot of money in investing in some of the newer technology, some of the newer machinery that helps batters identify some weaknesses in their game as they try and work and build up their swing to optimize it. And this is a huge win for the organization, for Tim Elko to get here. Now, hopefully, he can carry over what he did in the minor leagues when he was named the organization's minor league hitter of the month for March and April, when he crushed 10 homers, had an OPS over 1,100. I guess he had 9 homers in April. He hit one in May. But nevertheless, clearly he had a monster start to his season at Charlotte, forced the issue for the White Sox, and he's up here today. He's wearing number 30. I actually asked him about that about an hour ago in the clubhouse. I said, what's the significance behind number 30? Because, oh, by the way, he had been wearing number 25 at Charlotte, and if you don't know, Andrew Vaughn wears number 25 here for the White Sox, so that could have been awkward. But he's wearing number 30. I asked him the significance behind that. He said that his hitting coach, who I believe he will reference in the audio we're going to play for you here in a moment, but his hitting coach wore number 30 when he played, and Nicky Delmonico, White Sox fans, Nicky Delmonico, who worked as a hitting instructor inside the White Sox organization a couple of years ago. Nicky Delmonico is his boy, and Nicky wore 30 for the White Sox. So a couple of people who were instrumental in helping Tim Elko get to where he's gotten to wore number 30. So that is part of the significance as to why he chose that uniform number. All right, I'll let you hear from Tim Elko, the man of the hour. He spoke in the clubhouse just about an hour ago, and you'll hear all the questions about what it's like to finally be here.
I got told before the game yesterday and got to head out and catch a flight and get to Chicago. So it's been pretty fun just getting texts from friends and family. And sorry if I haven't responded to some people, but it's been awesome. So just thankful for everybody and for the opportunity and ready to go.
What was your reaction when they told you? Sergio told you, I imagine, right?
Yeah, he did. Just happiness, you know. I feel like a lot of hard work came to fruition, and just excited to get here and start my journey here.
You told me the other day that, you know, attention doesn't really, off-field attention doesn't really matter to you because you're focused on what you're doing, but did you get a kick out of, like, the fan support, the desire to have you up here and playing for the White Sox?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, you know, I try to stay off social media as much as I can, but, I saw some of the stuff on Twitter. It was pretty cool, and, to have support like that's a pretty cool feeling.
Were you able to sleep last night?
I was. I got a pretty good night's sleep, so feeling energized today and ready to go.
You mentioned the journey. Just when you think back about the journey, just what does it take for you to be able to get to this point right now?
Just a lot of hard work. Just a lot of people to thank for a lot of help and, you know, get me to be the player that I am today. And, yeah, like I said, just seeing it all come to fruition is a pretty cool feeling.
Mark brought up kind of the fan attention, and obviously they see the numbers, but what are they getting in you is in terms of a player, in terms of a person?
Yeah, just somebody who cares about winning, cares about their teammates, wants to do anything I can every single day to help us win. Always going to give it 110% and just be the best teammate and player I can be for this organization.
You seem locked in at the plate. Just what do you attest that success to so far this season?
Just a lot of help from people around me. You know, I got Jim and Rosie and Fuller and so many people to thank and that have helped me along this journey and this year and just kind of get me locked in on, you know, pitch decisions and swinging the pitches do damage to, and just a lot of people to thank, and yeah.
When do you think it'll hit you that you're a big leaguer?
It kind of already has. You know, yesterday when I was getting on the plane and my first time flying first class, and I was kind of like, dang, I guess I'm going to the big league. So, no, it's, you know, just getting here and seeing all the guys again. And, you know, I've already got so many buddies up here. So that makes it a little easier. But, yeah, it's starting to hit me now and excited to run out on the field tonight.
No meal on that plane, though, right?
Just no meal. Yeah. No meal. Just some snacks and, yeah, a little relaxation, some music, play a little Sudoku. So.
Have you ever been to Chicago before?
I've been here when I was younger, a little bit. Some of my dad's family lived in Chicago, so we would come to see them sometimes. But I probably haven't been here since I was like 7 or 8. I actually came to see I played summer ball in Wisconsin and came down and saw a Cubs game during the summer. But besides that, yeah, it's been a while.
What's it going to be like putting on the uniform to go out on the field and feel the whole atmosphere?
Yeah, it's going to be an honor to put on the White Sox uniform and, you know, just be by my brothers and playing baseball. It's going to be an honor and a lot of fun.
What conversations with Will been like so far? Has he kind of laid out some expectations for you?
You know, I wouldn't say like a whole lot of expectations, but just, you know, get here, keep doing what I'm doing and play hard and, you know, kind of read some of our team goals and, you know, that kind of stuff is super cool. You know, Will seems like an amazing manager, and I'm getting to meet him a little bit in spring training, but I'm excited to play for him and play for this team.
Will you have family in the stands today?
Yeah, I'll have my my parents, my sister, my cousin, some of my dad's family as well, and a couple of my buddies from college will be here too.
There aren't many major leaguers who can say they already have a statue of themselves somewhere else, but when you were excelling in Mississippi, did you have this in your mind? I mean, it sounds like you're a guy who's focused on what you're doing, but in the back of your mind was you're like, I can take this, I can make a career out of this?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, always the goal is always to become a professional baseball player and play in the MLB, so, you know, it was always in the back of my head. But yeah, like you said, always just try to be where my feet are. So I was enjoying my time at Ole Miss and you know, winning a national championship down there, and now it's time to help the White Sox win some games here.
Who helped you along the way, your hopes, from the time you were a kid till now?
A lot of people. You know, my hitting coach down in Tampa forever was Dave Kent, amazing guy. And, you know, my high school coaches, a lot of other people, Todd Sinal, a lot of people that, you know, I'm going to probably miss some names, but there's so many people that helped me along the way, and summer ball coaches, everything. So super thankful for all them and all the help they gave me.
What was today like just walking into the clubhouse as a major leaguer for the first time?
It was pretty cool. Rode over here with Cannon, and he's one of my good buddies, and yeah, just walking in, kind of seeing all the layout and everything, and just getting a feel for being here. It's a pretty cool feeling.
Any advice on the car ride over here?
Not a whole lot of advice. We're just, you know, we're buddies, so we were just kind of bantering a little bit, you know, talking about what's been going on and whatnot. But no, he's a great dude, and it's nice to have him and some of the other guys in here that I've already been around a lot. So. Have I cried yet? I was tearing up a little bit when I was telling my dad on the phone, but haven't cried yet. So,
was he the first person you called?
Yeah, I called. I called my dad, and they were on the way actually to Charlotte to come for Mother's Day weekend and with my mom. And I called my dad, and he was kind of like whispering. I'm like, "Oh, is mom there?" He's like, "Well, she's on a work call right now." So we had to wait a couple minutes, and when she got off her call, I told him so.
Were they crying?
I didn't hear any crying. Maybe there was some after the phone call. They were trying to, you know, stay stoic. And no, but I'm sure there'll probably be some tears today.
Just
You said they were on the way. Were they driving? Or
they were driving,
so
yeah.
So they turn around, and what was the plan of action for them?
They just kept going to Charlotte and then got a flight from Charlotte this morning.
So there you go, folks. Tim Elko, who makes his Major League Baseball debut, he'll have his family in the house. They were en route to Charlotte, and they ended up hopping on a flight to join him here. They'll be in the house. If you're looking for something to do for Mother's Day, hey, if you're still looking for that Mother's Day gift, join us tomorrow and the Elkos, May 11th, to celebrate all moms with a special pregame parade around the field before the game at 1:10 p.m. Plus, we'll have mom-approved specials with a card craft station, caricature artists, Mimosa, the Mimosa bar, and more. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Mother's Day. Tim Elko hitting eighth today and playing first base in his Major League Baseball debut. I have to tell you, the call-up of Tim Elko last night was probably the only thing that could have usurped the story that hit on Thursday, and we are going to pivot quickly to that one as we come back because we are now in the White Sox papal era. The White Sox are 1-0 now that the new Pope is a White Sox fan. 1-0 at Wright Field. Can they make it 2-0 today? We'll talk about it coming up next right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller, live at Wright Field, getting set for White Sox and Marlins game 2 of 3 here at Wright Field before the White Sox head off to Cincinnati for a road trip after this short homestand wraps up. So, on Thursday, we had a bit of an upset when it came to the election of the new Pope. The holiest of holies in the Catholic religion, and we found out that the new pope became the first American-born pope, and he was the first, because he's first American, the first Chicago-born pope, and I think that caught a lot of folks off guard, and quickly, there was some unfounded rumors circulating that the newly elected Pope was indeed a Cubs fan. And fortunately, we found out quickly from the Pope's brother that that was not indeed the truth. This is courtesy of WGN.
Clear up the thing about the Cubs and White Sox.
Yeah, he was never, ever a Cubs fan, so I don't know where that came from. He was always a Sox fan. Our mother was a Cubs fan. I don't know, maybe that clued in there. And our dad was a Cardinals fan. So I don't know where that all came from. And all the aunts, our mom's family was from North Side, so that's why they were Cubs fans.
But he rooted for the White Sox.
That's right. But where it came from, I don't know, because he would have been the only one.
So there you go. The Pope's brother confirming that his the holiest of holies is now is actually a White Sox fan. And sure enough, the Sun-Times did some digging and found in some archival footage, I'm sorry, actually photos, that the Pope was actually indeed at the White Sox World Series in attendance back in 2005. Obviously, we're doing a lot to celebrate that, the 20-year anniversary this year. And sure enough, I then saw footage yesterday that he was actually shown on television in the ninth inning of Game 1 of the World Series as Bobby Jenks was closing out the game. There is video footage on Fox of the newly elected Pope in attendance for Game 1 of the 2005 World Series. Here is the Pope being introduced in Italy on Friday, and we'll give you a quick little synopsis. This is in Latin.
Qui sibi nomen imposuit leonem decimum quartum. La pace sia con tutti voi.
Again, that was the Pope being introduced in Rome yesterday. My Latin's a bit rusty, but I believe he said, I'm not a Cubs fan. I've always been a lifelong White Sox fan. Go Bears. It's either that or peace be with you. Again, it's a little rusty on my Latin is, so it's one of the two. One of the two there, the Pope being introduced, the new Pope, a White Sox fan. And of course, he took Pope Leo the 14th. We can neither confirm nor deny he did so to honor Paul Konerko. Nobody has asked him that question directly yet, but I think it's on the table. Stephen Colbert had some fun with the new Pope being a Chicago-born fan.
It's not just that Leo is an American. He was born in Chicago. This means officially I can no longer imitate the Pope using an Italian accent. From now on, the Pope's going to sound like this. Hey there, it's your buddy Leo. The deep dish papa. Just talked to God, and not even he can help the White Sox. Sorry. First order of business, I will be canonizing Michael Jordan. Now, let's end by saying, da, prayers.
I don't know, Mr. Colbert. One day as Pope, Tim Elko has received the call. A lot of White Sox fans' prayers have already been answered. They were asking for it for a while now, and all of a sudden, one day as Pope, Tim Elko, up here in Chicago. So I think that was a bit of a low blow by Stephen Colbert there. Let's quickly pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves. Hey, Sox fans, learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust. Starting at $165, kids aged 5 through 12 can register for a four-day baseball camp offered at over 35 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. Campers will receive a Sox swag bag with a custom sliding mitt, pack of Topps baseball cards, and more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. When we come back, expecting to hear from Michael A. Taylor, who has reached 10 years of service time in baseball. Less than 10% of major leaguers do that. We're going to congratulate him and talk about the Sox season so far and what it's like to receive the call and make your Major League Baseball debut. We'll do that next right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Taylor hits one into the gap in right center field. This is going to roll all the way to the wall. Baldwin's got good speed, waved around third. He'll come home to score, and the White Sox take a 2-1 lead on a Michael A. Taylor RBI double.
That was last night. White Sox went on to win 6-2 over the Marlins, and Michael A. Taylor there on the highlight with a double. He's been a double machine at times this season. Had 3-1 game earlier this year. Became only the third White Sox player to do that, have three doubles in the same game. And he joins us right now on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, hanging out up at Wright Field as we get set for game number 2 of 3 here between the White Sox and Marlins before the Sox head off for Cincinnati. And I wanted to have Michael A. Taylor on today because, Michael, I wanted to welcome you and say congratulations, my man. 10 years of service time on Thursday. You achieved it against the Kansas City Royals, and less than 10% of Major League players ever get a chance to say they did that. So congratulations, my man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, man. So I just want to start out and say that is a huge achievement, and I don't think a lot of people out there necessarily recognize how difficult that is to do. Again, less than 10% of Major League Baseball players have ever done that. Huge, huge accomplishment. When you were growing up and thinking about, oh, could I maybe one day be a major leaguer, did you ever allow yourself to think, I can make a career of this and be there for over a decade? I mean, that's a huge achievement. Do you let yourself, your imagination run wild and just think about where you're at now?
Yeah, I mean, now I understand kind of what that milestone means. But as a kid, I mean, that thought never really crossed my mind. You're just kind of in the backyard dreaming of hitting walk-offs and robbing home runs and things like that.
I love it. You Last night you almost had a robbery of a home run. The good news was it didn't actually make a difference in the ballgame because you guys went on to win. You also saw earlier this season Luis Robert make an incredible robbery of a grand slam. You've, of course, had plenty in your career. What's it like watching a teammate like Luis Robert do that in center field, and how cool is it for you to actually have done that in your career?
It's been very cool to watch him play. You know, I think a lot of the things he does out there is very special. The things that stand out to me are the closing speed, the reads that he gets. He's very comfortable, it seems, going back on balls over his head. Mm-hmm. And like you said, he's made a lot of great plays so far this season.
Michael A. Taylor joining me here on White Sox Weekly. All right, Michael, so listen, you've got a Gold Glove in your bag a little bit. So I have to imagine, did you, when he made that great robbery against the Brewers, you know, stealing a grand slam from Rhys Hoskins, do you think to yourself, I could have got that one? Or do you just kind of nod your head and go, all right, that was a pretty good one, man?
Yeah, I'm just watching and, you know, appreciating these great plays. And he makes it look so easy. And then, you know, kind of just comes down and smirks. So, you know, I'm just happy for him and enjoy that moment. Obviously, that was a big play in that game.
So you've, for the most part throughout your career, been manning center field. But, of course, Luis is an excellent defender himself, which means the White Sox have, for the most part this season, had the luxury, when you're out there, having two Gold Gloves caliber center fielders play. I think that's got to be a huge advantage for your pitchers defensively. How has it been for you when you're either in right field or occasionally in left?
It's been good. I haven't spent too much time in the corners, but having Louis in center helps out a lot. I mean, he takes a lot of pressure off the guys in the corners just with how much ground he covers. And I think we've worked really well together. There's a lot of, you know, nonverbal communication going on, and he kind of understanding my range and where I can be at times, and vice versa for him. So it's been good. It's a good adjustment. And, you know, I've enjoyed kind of expanding, you know, my experience in the outfield from center to the corners.
Michael A. Taylor joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Michael, you have been in the clubhouse to see several players get the call this season, walk through the doors, and, you know, be here making their Major League Baseball debut, including today, Tim Elko will make his debut. Does it take you back to when you were a rookie and kind of doing that yourself at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think for me, the first thing that goes through my mind is just excited for these guys, especially Tim. You know, seeing what he's done so far early in the season in AAA, and, you know, I got to be around him a good bit in spring training. So excited for him, excited for this opportunity for him and what he can do and bring to the team.
So, Michael, you actually hit a home run in your first game against the Mets on August 12th. So you have any advice for the young kids? Because you actually handled the pressure probably better than most when they're making this debut. I have to imagine a lot of guys have nerves playing in front of the huge crowd for the first time. You were able to kind of just compartmentalize and go up and hit a home run. So do you remember that moment? Any advice for the young kids?
Yeah, the advice that I got that day was the game is the same. You know, they still have to throw it over the plate. They still have to catch the ball. And you just go out there and play the game like you've been doing at all the other levels and your whole life. So treat it like another game, slow it down and appreciate the moment, but don't let it get too big. And, you know, just go out there and enjoy the game of baseball.
So, Michael, how long did it take you, you know, after that moment, again, celebrating 10 years of service time this past week, you know, when you made your Major League Baseball debut, how long do you think it took for you to finally, you know, feel completely comfortable and recognize, hey, I belong here and I think I can have some success? Was it like a week? Was it a month? Did it take a couple of years? How long until you finally felt comfortable as a major leaguer?
Well, I think the game never stops being challenging. But for me, I kind of always felt like I could go out there and compete at this level. There's definitely times where you're going to struggle, and I don't care if you've been in the league for 20 years. You're not immune to that. So I guess to answer your question, I kind of always felt like I said, could compete at this level.
Well, and clearly that has been the case now over – again, it's, the interesting thing is, like, you know, it's, I say 10 years of service time. You've been playing baseball for over 12 years where you've had the opportunity to, you know, be – but it's the, you know, the funny thing about with service time, of course. But it's a huge achievement. And did you kind of like on Thursday when you – did you do a little fist pump, any type of celebration? Because you get the full pension. You got the – I believe it's the baseball gold card that's supposed to come with 10 years where you can, for the rest of your life, go into any Major League Baseball stadium. Not that that's a huge issue for a former player, but it's the little things. I have to imagine that's a pretty cool accomplishment.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty cool. You get the gold card at 8 years.
Okay.
So I was able to get that a few years ago. And the team did an amazing job. Mike Tauchman put together a little – presentation in the clubhouse, and they got me a present, and then, you know, being able to talk to my friends and family that the day of, that all just kind of came together and made it a special day for me.
That's very cool to hear. Michael A. Taylor joining us after achieving 10 years of service time in Major League Baseball this past week. So if you don't mind sharing, what was the present the team got you?
It was like a signed photo, mm-hmm. With a picture of myself and all the different teams that I've played for in jerseys, and everybody on the team signed it.
So I don't want to assume too much, but you did play for the Washington Nationals back when they won the World Series, and you had some pretty big moments during that playoff run for them. Is that for you, when you think back, is that the one of your favorite memories as a ball player, or is there something else that is a close second?
That's definitely up there, you know, to win the World Series with the team that drafted me, you know, and I was with them the few times that we made it to the playoffs and kind of got bounced in the first round. So to finally to cross that finish line with them was very special.
Very cool. Michael A. Taylor joining us for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. As we get set for game number 2 of 3 for White Sox and Marlins tonight. So you're in center field tonight. Will Venable mentioned to us that Luis Robert's knee, a little bit barking at him a little bit. So just like for you, is it just like riding a bike, getting back in center field, feel comfortable here at Wright Field in the cavernous center field?
Yeah, I would say it's where I'm still most comfortable with the bulk of my work being in center throughout my career.
Oh, and you know what? Last thing I wanted to ask you, because I was in the clubhouse earlier today, and I heard Josh Rojas doing his best to try and coax you to throw on that varsity sweater for warmups, and you declined. Any reason? Is it just not out of the out of your rhythm, or is that just not your style?
No, it's... It was interesting, the sweater. I just didn't see it as an on-field, outerwear, I guess.
Is it comfy? Have you checked it out a little bit at all? Or
no, I haven't put it on.
Okay, because I know it's a giveaway today for the fans who show up. So pretty cool. Michael, again, congratulations. So happy for you. Very cool achievement. And it's been fun watching you play. We'll watch you man center field tonight. Thanks for joining me here on White Sox Weekly.
Thank you for having me.
That is Michael A. Taylor again. He, less than 10% of major league players actually play 10 years of or achieve 10 years of service time in baseball. So for that to happen, a huge achievement for him. As he mentioned, the team did a good job celebrating and putting together a little ceremony for him before the game. So love to hear those stories, bring you inside the clubhouse. And yeah, as I mentioned, it was funny as Josh Rojas and Miguel Vargas both were sporting the varsity sweaters today in warmups. I will tell you, it's a beautiful day out here, but there is a bit of crispness in the air. So honestly, I think it was a solid move by both Josh Rojas and Miguel Vargas to throw on the varsity sweaters. I got to feel them a little bit. Very comfy material. I have not put one on just yet, but pretty sweet Sox varsity sweater that they're giving away today if you come on out in attendance. So it was pretty fun to watch Rojas and Vargas sport them while they were warming up earlier today. I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. If you're new to the program, every Saturday, 2 hours prior to pregame, we give you White Sox Weekly, where we get you caught up on the week in White Sox news. We bring you guests like Michael A. Taylor. We've got Vinny Duber, who broke the news yesterday evening that Tim Elko was getting the call of the Chicago Sun-Times. Vinny Duber is going to join me at 4:30. Scott Merkin, who was down in Charlotte this past week, he brought Tim Elko back with him. Who knew? If all we knew that all it was going to take was Scott Merkin to be sent to Charlotte and the Catholic Church to elect a new pope who's a White Sox fan to bring up Tim Elko, we would have done this long ago, right? At least a month ago. Anyway, I digress. So Vinny Duber is going to join us at 4:30. We're going to hear Scott Merkin is going to join us at 5. You just heard from Michael A. Taylor. We brought you inside the clubhouse with Tim Elko, who met the media earlier today on what the experience has been like for him. So plenty of fun stuff. 312-332-3776 if you want to jump on in and talk about the White Sox with me. We'll always welcome your phone calls here on White Sox Weekly. Up next, though, I do want to pivot ever so slightly before we get back into the Sox news about a story from Major League Baseball, Boston specifically, a superstar refusing to do what the team is asking him to do. Who's in the right and who's in the wrong on this one? We'll talk about it next right here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, live at Wright Field as we're getting set for White Sox and Marlins game number 2 of 3 here over the weekend, including Mother's Day. We'll be here tomorrow as well. Festive day, no doubts, tomorrow. And, of course, it's a beautiful day today, and happy Tim Elko Day to all those that are celebrating. I mentioned we'll talk a little bit about the Red Sox decision, or at least the request to ask Rafi Devers if he might consider playing first base. We're going to pivot ever so slightly, get back to that maybe in about half an hour or so. It makes a little bit more sense for us timing-wise to do to remember Chet Lemon here, who we learned the other day on Thursday died at the age of 70. And Chet Lemon, a longtime White Sox great for 5 seasons, was a fan favorite. So we're going to do that here, and then we'll get back to Devers in a little bit, maybe after Vinny Duber joins us at 4:30. Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Saturday, May 24th, as the White Sox take on the Texas Rangers at 3:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a 1914 Baseball World Tour shirt presented by Coca-Cola. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right, so as I mentioned, unfortunate, sad day on Thursday when we learned that Chet Lemon had died at the age of 70. Of course, White Sox fans who grew up in the mid to late 70s, a lot of them remembered Chet Lemon as one of their all-time favorites. And if specifically if you were a youngster who was growing up, now I was a little bit too young for Chet Lemon. He was just before I was born. He was a player for the White Sox. I remember Chet Lemon as a Tiger and being a pain for the White Sox numerous times at Old Tiger Stadium. And I remember, you know, when I was really kind of starting to watch baseball, Chet Lemon was, you know, the center fielder for the Tigers. And I remember growing up and playing RBI baseball on Nintendo. And I remember Chet Lemon being a critical piece in that Tigers lineup. And he just always, because the White Sox weren't in the original RBI baseball on Nintendo. So, you know, which team were you going to use? A lot of times it's like, all right, there's the Twins. There's the Tigers. The rivalry obviously wasn't quite the same because the Tigers back then were in the AL East. And the White Sox were in the AL West. This was back before, obviously, divisions had been expanded and you didn't even have a central division in the American League. But I digress. But for folks who are maybe in their early 50s or older, you'll remember Chet Lemon as a White Sox player playing at Old Comiskey Park. And he came up as a third baseman. Actually played, I believe, 9 games his first season in the big leagues. And before the very last game of his, I guess it wasn't his rookie year yet, but like the first year that he was actually in baseball, he moved to center field because he wasn't handling third baseman all that well. And I believe the story goes that Chet Lemon said he didn't have enough room to cover to move around at third base. And so they said, okay, well, we'll give you plenty of room. You go on outs and you cover the cavernous center field of Old Comiskey Park. And that he did to the tune of just one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball for the time that he was playing it. And so I'll defer here to somebody who grew up watching and loving Chet Lemon and also somebody who got to know Chet Lemon. I'm talking, of course, about Chuck Garvine and Ozzie Guillen as they remembered the passing of Chet Lemon on CHSN on Thursday.
He was my favorite player. The games are on Channel 44, most of them, and he wore jersey number 44. He played with a flair and athleticism like no other White Sox player at the time. Look at that throw he made. In recent years, he did suffer from a series of strokes. He went to the Tigers, won a World Series there in 1984. He returned to Detroit last year to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Tigers winning the 84 World Series. But, you know, when you hear stuff like that, you know, especially when it was someone who was connected to your childhood, that hurts. It's a painful day for people, though, certainly of my generation and above, who watched him play for the White Sox.
He just, like, I got the privilege to play against him. Known because I was a good friend with Harold Baines, I got a chance, opportunity to get close to him all the time we play against each other. The last time I saw him, he was helping kids.
Play like Little League, right?
Little Leagues. Yeah. They have like a big school. But if somebody want to play the game right, that's the guy you look for. You know, this man played the game right. This guy always have a smile on his face, play hard, very tough-nosed guys, and it's just something you appreciate what he did on the field every single day and everything.
Again, that was Ozzie Guillen and Chuck Garfine on CHSN this past week, remembering Chet Lemon, Chuck talking about how growing up he was his favorite, and I think a lot of White Sox fans who are Chuck Garfine's age can absolutely echo those sentiments. I've heard that from a lot of people. He played the game with a lot of flair and just made you, you know, love defense from a center field. And by the way, I've seen some people say, hey, you know, Chet Lemon was one of those guys who was the Hall of very good, just not good enough to be a Hall of Famer, but just an excellent player. I think when you start to look at his WAR numbers, though, I mean, don't necessarily dismiss. Could the Veterans Committee maybe consider Chet Lemon as a potential Hall of Famer? I don't think it's completely out of the question. He accumulated some pretty absurd WAR numbers when he was roaming center field, not just for the White Sox, but for the Tigers as well. In 77, he accumulated a 5.9 WAR. 78, he went 4.9. 79, 5.8. And listen, anytime you're talking about a WAR above 5, I mean, you're starting to get into, you know, what a lot of MVP down ballot caliber players are talking about here. So, you know, a 5.9, a 5.8 for the White Sox in 77 and 79, those are some pretty lofty totals. He was an all-star for the White Sox in 78 and 79. And then in 1983 and 84 for the Tigers, Chet Lemon had WARs of 6.2 both seasons. So in 84, when the Tigers, that for those of you who weren't born yet or not familiar with it, that 84 Tigers team was absolutely dominant all season long, had one of the best starts in Major League Baseball history. I think they started out like 10-0, and were just, they ran roughshod over the league. And Chet Lemon had a WAR of 6.2 that magical season for the Tigers. So in addition to being a great player for the White Sox, he was also an excellent player for the Tigers at a time when Sparky Anderson was managing them to a World Series championship in 1984. In fact, yes, the only player who had a better WAR season in 84 than Chet Lemon for the Tigers was Alan Trammell. Alan Trammell, when he was 26 in 84, had a 6.8 WAR, and Chet Lemon had 6.2 for the White Sox, I'm sorry, for the Tigers that year. He hit .287 with a .357 on base, .495 slug. So .287, .357, .495 slash line, an OPS of .852. He had 20 homers, 76 RBIs for that Tigers team, and just a brilliant defensive center field. He played for them, and that again, one of the I think one of the all time great World Series teams. If you want to look at just like for a 1 year stretch, that Tigers team was pretty dominant. They went 104 and 58 in 1984, and eventually won the World Series over the San Diego Padres 4-1 after dispersing the Royals in a clean sweep. They swept them 3-0 in the ALCS back in 1984. So Chet Lemon, a great Tiger, but also before that, a great White Sox and a fan favorite for a long, long time. So rest in peace, Chet Lemon. Dies at the age of 70 on Thursday. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. When we come back, Vinny Duber just walked into the booth. Vinny's going to join me. We're going to talk all about what's going on with the White Sox, and he broke the news about Tim Elko getting the call, so we'll pick his brain on Tim Elko. Luis Robert, how long is he going to be a member of the White Sox, in Vinny's opinion, and plenty more to talk about right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Hey, join us at the ballpark for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. Tickets starting at only $10. Enjoy kids, run the bases post-game, caricature artists, and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Pleased to be joined by Vinny Duber in the booth right now from the Chicago Sun-Times. Vinny, thanks for joining me here, man. Glad to have you on White Sox Weekly. So we were just joking a minute ago, and I said the only thing that could actually usurp the Pope news, the Pope being a Sox fan, is the fact that the news that you broke last night, Tim Elko got the call for the White Sox.
we know where everybody ranks among White Sox fans, right? You've got Tim Elko number one and the Pope at number two.
It's funny because I already have seen yesterday, I saw a couple of Pope costumes walking around. I think the question is, will that be the norm where there's basically at least one Pope costume sighting at every Sox game? And listen, if they turn things around in the next year or so, I have to imagine there's going to be multiple fans walking around in Pope garb with Sox logos all over it.
It would be fun, like, you know, 5-10 years from now, just, you know, for that to be just like a thing about
Absolutely.
Going to a Sox game. Like, oh yeah, you go to a game in another part of the city, they got their, or another part of the country, excuse me, they've got their own traditions. Sox fans' traditions, yeah, one of them dresses like the Pope every day.
I think it's inevitable at this point. Like, I mean, we're, you know, just the way they're at right now, you know, the season hasn't been ideal in terms of wins and losses. I personally, though, have been somewhat encouraged by some of the development I'm seeing, and also just the message that I'm hearing from Will Venable on a day-in and a day-out basis. I'm curious your thoughts on where they're at right now organizationally. You know, Sox fans, I think, are realistic about, you know, what this season was probably going to be like. But, you know, am I being too optimistic about some of the things I'm seeing?
Well, I think what really strikes me as someone who covered the previous rebuilding effort on the South Side, it kind of reminds me of that stage of things, right? I mean, and you've got some of those bright spots appearing, mm-hmm. not necessarily very quickly, not necessarily in a large volume, but you can point to, you know, 2-3 guys on the field now and say, oh, okay, that's the future. You
yes.
know, whether it's good or not, we'll find out.
Sure.
But that's the future. Oh, look, Chase Mydroth at shortstop. That's somebody we can watch and with an eye on the future. Edgar Caro behind mm-hmm. home plate. Any number of these guys in the starting rotation. And certainly now you got Tim Elko coming up today. Maybe he's working his way into that conversation as well. So there are signs of, I don't even want to say progress, but change, right? Mm-hmm. And signs that things are moving down the track a little bit toward what Chris Getz and that front office are trying to build. Now, obviously, Sox fans remember what happened with the last rebuild. It did not reach the heights that it was hoped that it would. So you don't know how these things are going to play out. But in the middle of a season where, at least from a win-loss standpoint, mm-hmm. it does look a lot like last year.
Absolutely.
You can point around the field, around the diamond, and say, oh, okay, there's something to watch. There's something to pay attention to every night. And 2-3 years from now, maybe that's a guy who's going to be a big part, or several guys who mm-hmm. are going to be a big part of a vastly different thing from a win-loss standpoint.
So, you know, it's been one day, and I joked, Stephen Colbert took a shot at the Pope saying, you know, even he can't help the White Sox. And I said, whoa, 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 Stephen, one day in, and we've already got Tim Elko here. So some Sox fans' prayers are being answered clearly. So what are the realistic expectations of a 26-year-old in Tim Elko, who was absolutely mashing in AAA, and clearly anybody who's covered the team a little bit, if you talk to him, I'm sure you can enlighten us a little bit, Vinny. You know, he did a lot of work in the offseason, you know, trying to adjust his swing and making sure that, at least in terms of the pitch recognition, what he's attacking. And so I guess, what do you think might be translatable from AAA, what all the success he had, to maybe the majors?
Well, I think the promising thing is that he's hit basically everywhere he's been. And and as he's climbed through the minors, the numbers have been there, some success has been there for him. That being said, what we always hear from managers past and present is that there is no bigger gap, no bigger reality check for young players as they're moving up than the one from AAA to the major leagues. And so Tim Elko has a challenge on his hands, not necessarily because he's Tim Elko, but because he's a guy going from AAA to the majors. Any player making that jump is going to have that same challenge. I think you've got a guy, though, who is talked about very highly when it comes to his work ethic and the kind of, you know, all that stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. This is a guy who was a 10th round draft pick. I mean, we're talking about him today with fans having such excitement. I just mentioned minutes ago him maybe being part of the future conversation here. He was a 10th round pick. I mean, I don't think the expectation when you make a 10th round pick is for that guy to be starting for your major league team every single day. It's a hope that that works out that way. But it's just something to be impressed by that he's at the major league level at all. Now, White Sox fans don't have to be reminded of the kind of impact those guys can make. Mark Burley's getting a statue here this summer, and I mean, he would have been thrilled to be a 10th round pick on draft day, I'm sure. But when it comes to Elko, I think the consistency of production throughout the minor leagues is something that you can look at and say, oh, that's exciting. He's figured out how to hit pitching at every level. Maybe he'll figure out how to do it here. It might not happen tonight. It might not happen this week. It might not happen this month. But he looks like a guy who's going to stick with it and try to figure things out and try to contribute in any way that he can.
Vinny Duber of the Chicago Sun-Times joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller as we get you set for game two of this three-game set here at Raitt Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 5:30, 6:10 first pitch. So, Vinny, what do you think about how Will Venable will attempt to parse out the plate appearances, the at-bats, for someone like Tim Elko, knowing that we've got Andrew Vaughn still on the roster? Will mentioned in pregame today, you know, they both are first base DH, so they limit his flexibility. You've got Vargas at third who can move to first, but that probably won't be happening as much these days now that you have two guys who probably have to take up some of those at-bats between the two of them. So I guess, how would you play it? How do you think Will Venable might play it with Andrew Vaughn and Tim Elko now?
Well, I'll start with what Will said pregame, which was basically, you know, we're going to mix and match. We're going to look at the lineup every day. A lot of, you know, kind of coach speak kind of thing. Sure. But again, that is true. I think you're going to see Elko and Vaughn in the lineup probably together at first base and DH in some combination most days, unless Elko, you know, really struggles and has to go back to the minors or something like that. But as of right now, I don't think you call him up without, and Will even said yesterday after the game that they want to give him a pretty decent runway to try and stick. So I think you'll see both those guys in the lineup on a regular basis. It's not necessarily the swap maybe that many Sox fans were kind of hoping for. Yes. You know, obviously Andrew has struggled a great deal at the plate so far this season, still hitting under 200, under 190, I believe, and Elko's numbers have been huge, but now let's see what they're going to be like in the major leagues. Elko has a pretty good defensive reputation. That might tilt the scales towards him being at first base a little bit more often, but I don't think that Tim Elko's arrival means Andrew Vaughn is going anywhere necessarily. I think that, I mean, just look at today's lineup. Andrew Vaughn's batting third and playing DH today. Tim Elko's down in the eighth spot. Obviously, that can change, but I think what a lot of White Sox fans were hoping for, and again, this is how fans act, so it's not surprising, but hey, the guy who's struggling, get him out of here in favor of somebody who's playing real well. I think that's not going to happen. You're seeing Vaughn, and I think you're going to see Vaughn continue to be part of this lineup for the foreseeable future.
I would agree. I think that's – and the good thing I think is it's nice to hear, though, Will Venable say, hey, you know, basically to paraphrase, like, they don't want to bring him up and not let him have every day at bats. Like, and I think we can all agree that for all the White Sox fans who are, like, rooting for Tim Elko to get up here quicker – like you didn't want him to come up here and then be stuck on the bench behind Andrew Vaughn and somebody else and not being, you know, developed, right? So, like, I think that's one thing where I'm encouraged a little bit to see the way the organization has moved. And now, you know, before I get ahead of myself, let's see and make sure that Elko does get those at-bats each and every day. But what you just laid out, I think it makes a whole lot of sense. Vinny Duber of the Chicago Sun-Times joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I want to move to Luis Robert. Part of the reason Andrew Vaughn's hitting third today, I think, is because Luis Robert, Will Venable mentioned, his knee's bothering him a little bit. So it's a day-to-day injury, according to Will, but he's out of the lineup today. Bob Nightingale on Sunday reported that if Luis Robert continues to hit, the White Sox would like to move him by Memorial Day. Now, that's interesting because anytime Bob Nightingale has a White Sox nugget, my antenna goes up immediately. And so I'm curious, do you think that's a realistic, you know, the way Major League Baseball works, do you think it's realistic that the White Sox could actually trade Luis Robert by Memorial Day if he starts to heat up a little bit and hit well?
That'd be a really early, like a big name trade, yeah, you know, in baseball. Not to say that it can't happen. It has happened in the past, but that would be surprising for it to happen at that point in the calendar to me.
Yeah.
That being said, I think the whole point is Luis Robert Jr., his value since the end of that 2023, or I should say since the start of 2024 season, has been a lot lower, yeah, than probably the White Sox would hope, right?
Yes.
Because his production hasn't been there. Now, if you're getting any sort of production out of him that boosts that value at all, which, and Bob cited it in his report last week, Luis's numbers were going up,
yeah,
a week ago, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, all right, sell high, cash in, right? It's obviously not as high as it would be, but you could see where the desire would be there to turn Luis into something that would be more in line with what Chris Getz and the front office, how they value him as,
sure,
a player, not necessarily what the market is valuing him at the moment. I would say that so far, even though there has been some improvement, Luis's value just probably isn't there yet to be that kind of big, oh, bring in more talent, get a crochet-style return. Who,
yeah,
knows if it'll ever be that big, but, you know, that's the kind of thinking. This guy was an all-star 2 years ago, and, you know, and even before that was being looked at as kind of a centerpiece of a,
sure,
team, potential from a talent standpoint. Are they going to be able to get that kind of value in return for him again? He'd probably really have to turn it on here this summer, just based on on how poorly last year went and how slow he got starting this year. But I certainly could see them wanting to try to turn him into the most that they can.
Part of me feels like, hey, okay, let's let Bob Nightingale know that we're open to the discussions. They put that potential deadline out there so that everybody around baseball will see, hey, all right, they're getting serious. They're truly considering moving him. They're trying to create that artificial deadline prior to the trade deadline. But to what you just laid out, based on the way he's played, even though, you know, he's leading the American League in stolen bases, he's shown better plate discipline at times, but the batting average is still sub 200. So it's like that push and pull of, hey, we love to see better plate discipline because that actually has been the one thing that's really missed, that he's really missed from his game. But it's like, okay, so if you can actually draw these walks the way you are, but now still have that, you know, that power that you had in the past, now you've really got something. It almost feels like, though, if you're going to maximize your return, if you're the White Sox, you kind of probably have to wait this out till you get deeper into the summer and have the trade deadline and hopefully have some other bidders where they're creating this market where it's like, okay, who's willing to give me the most for Luis Robert? And then you can maybe get something closer to a Garrett Crochet return.
And you're giving Luis the chance to turn things on.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If you're saying, all right, it's the end of this month, it's 2-3 weeks from now, okay, how much can those numbers grow,
yeah,
in that time? If you are waiting all the way to the end of July, you could be looking at a guy who has really turned things around, who potentially, you,
yes,
know? So,
yes.
I think it's probably going to wait until much closer to the trade deadline than Memorial Day. The thing that I always think about with Luis and have been for a while now, even dating back to last season, is that option's coming up,
yes,
at the end of this, after this season. If they don't make that move, if they can't make that move at the trade deadline, is that their last opportunity to do so, given that that option is looming?
No, it's a great question. And then the interesting thing is, right, if he actually starts to hit better over in the way as the weather warms up, like we know that he generally prefers, will other teams look at that and say, okay, that option, that's a benefit, Or are other teams saying, like, this is where the White Sox could have it, it working in their favor, where some teams are like, okay, we just want a rental. We don't want to commit to long-term money. And there's other teams, like maybe the Dodgers, who are saying, hey, you know what? That option, that's fairly team-friendly for a guy who's a Gold Glove-caliber center fielder who, when he's right and hitting well, is a pretty dangerous bat, you know, especially if you're like the Dodgers. You think, oh, sixth, seventh hitter, I'll take that as my guy. So that's where I think it plays in the White Sox favor, but it's a fascinating thing that I know we're going to be following all summer long. How about some of the pitching, Vinny? What has impressed you? Because I will say both Brennan and I have, each and every day when we come, you know, to the ballpark, we're like, you know what? The nice thing about this White Sox team right now is there's a lot of interesting arms that are on the mound starting most days. And so at least from a, you know, from a fan's perspective, when your team is, if you're 11-28, it's like, you know what, though? I can still at least watch the team on a day-in and day-out basis and find some optimistic pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Matt Theis, you know, the White Sox catcher the other day, yesterday, and I asked him, you know, when you look around this team, this is a team obviously that's geared toward the future. What do you see, you know, as somebody who's been in the game, what do you see that excites you for the long term for this team? And he went right to the starting rotation. And I think that that's a good point because these guys are all young for the most part, right? I mean, obviously, you got Bryce Wilson stepping into the spot that was Martin Perez's, and he obviously is a veteran and like stuff like that. But you've got Cannon and Martin and Smith and Burke, who are all capable of being part of this thing for a really long time. Now, I think the thing, too, that White Sox fans should remember is the competition aspect of that. Probably the two most exciting pitchers, if not three, if you're counting Grant Taylor, are all down in the minor leagues, yes. Are all down at Double A right now. So you've got these four young pitchers up here right now. What happens when you add three more,
yes.
or even more? You know, what happens when Drew Thorpe gets healthy? You know, this kind of thing with Hagen Smith, with Noah Schultz, when those guys get up here. Now you're talking about this huge number of arms that could be exciting for the future. I think the guys that you're watching on a nightly basis give you reason to watch because you're watching development in real time, right? I mean, whether Sean Burke has a good night or a bad night, you're watching it. You are in it. You're part of this journey. Davis Martin, same way. Obviously, Shane Smith has been kind of the guy that jumps out. He's probably been the guy with the best numbers, certainly. But, you know, if you're watching Cannon or Burke, you know, you're part of this journey. You're part of this development. And it might not end with those guys being a part of the starting rotation,
sure,
3 years down the road, because there are those arms in the minor leagues, but here you are,
yeah,
getting to watch it every night. And so I think, you know, if there are Sox fans out there, that to the point that you made when you asked the question, you know, well, what is there to watch every night? I mean, that's something to watch every night. I mean, are we watching the White Sox rotation of the future,
yeah,
right now?
Yeah, and one last point as I let you go, Vinny Duber, again, you can follow him on X at Vinny Duber. Great resource, does a great job covering the White Sox, and you can read him in the Sun-Times as well. But to your point about, like, you know, if you add theoretically Schultz, Smith, Taylor to front of this rotation, all of a sudden, too, I know it's, you know, probably the biggest weak spot on the roster, but all of a sudden, too, the bullpen gets stronger because all these guys, at least there's four potential arms in this rotation that I'm intrigued by. And so if a couple of those guys go to the pen, all of a sudden, what's been a huge weakness for the White Sox roster, now all of a sudden you can say, okay, now I can see why they didn't invest a great deal in the bullpen this offseason.
Absolutely, and I mean, that's just kind of how development goes sometimes, too, with a lot of these guys. They come up as a heralded, oh, are they going to be, you know, a top-of-the-rotation arm? No,
yeah,
but look how they're helping us out in the bullpen, yeah. And there are teams across baseball, probably every team across baseball can give you an example, at least one example of that on their current major league roster, a guy who they thought was going to be this, but ended up being an impact player in, yeah, a different role.
Great stuff. Vinny Duber, again, you can check him out on X at Vinny Duber. Read him in the Sun-Times, covering the White Sox out here at Wright Field. Thanks for joining me on White Sox Weekly, Vinny.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. I am Jeff Meller. We will get back. We'll talk about Rafael Devers in a moment. As I mentioned, want to just dive into that briefly about who's in the wrong, the Red Sox or their diva, Rafael Devers. We'll talk about that next right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Start your game day with a pregame patio party. 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat and drink buffet starting at just $63 per person. It's the best value in the ballpark for food, fun, and excitement. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas or call 312-674-1000. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. As I mentioned, Big story around Major League Baseball this past week, as I talked about it last Saturday when Tristan Casas had been lost for the season after, on the previous Friday night, blowing out his patella tendon in his knee as he was racing to first base. And now the Red Sox find themselves without a first baseman. So that made a lot of people wonder, would Rafael Devers, previously a third baseman, until the Red Sox signed Alex Bregman this offseason, because, oh, by the way, he's a far better defensive third baseman. Rafael Devers defensively amongst the worst third baseman in all of baseball the last couple of seasons. However, the Red Sox did sign Devers to a $315 million extension two off seasons ago. So that was the question, what would they do? Well, they moved Devers to DH despite the fact that he really didn't embrace the idea of that. And then after a horrific start, Devers caught fire for a little bit, and now his stats are pretty close to where they usually are at this stage of the season. So would Rafael Devers consider helping the Red Sox out and move to first base?
You playing first base, is that something you're open to if they ask?
No, ellos me hicieron la misma pregunta, me hicieron la pregunta ya, pero creo que ellos también me pusieron a jugar otra posición en Pink Train y creo que se ve muy feo de su parte. No tengo dos meses jugando una posición y creo que se ve muy, muy feo de su parte que me pidan que juegue otra posición ahora.
Yeah, no, they had the conversation with me. I don't think me personally it's the best decision after you know, they asked me to play a different position, and I don't even have 2 months playing this position to all of a sudden have me try to play another position. So from my end, it doesn't seem like a good decision.
The conversation with you happened after Tristan's injury, I'm assuming?
Sí, después que pasó lo que pasó con Casa, vinieron de mí. Yo sé que soy un pelotero, pero tampoco puedo jugar todas las posiciones, no me puedo adaptar como cualquier otro pelotero a una posición. Si de jugar primera, saben que no va a jugar de una vez, pero no es muy buena la decisión. Vinieron hacia mí, fue ahora, no sé por qué. Si ellos mismos me quitaron de una posición, me dijeron que, vamos a decir, que boté mi guante, que no iba a jugar más posición, y es algo como sin sentido que me pida que vuelva a jugar una posición.
Yeah, you know, it was after the Casas, what happened to Casas happened, they came to me and talked to me about it, and I, ¿cómo fue? ¿Por qué te hablaron?
Que no es buena decisión que ellos vengan hacia mí ahora porque no se ve bien después que me dijeron que no iba a cubrir mi posición en Pink Train y ahora me vuelven a decir que...
Yeah, you know, I know I'm a ball player. But at the same time, they can't expect me to play, you know, every single position out there. In spring training, they, you know, talked to me and basically, you know, told me to put away my glove, that I wasn't going to play any other position but DH. So right now, I just feel like it's not an appropriate decision by them to ask me to play another position.
So I find this fascinating because there was some conversation from people who are native Spanish speakers who said maybe the translation wasn't the best from the Red Sox translator. But what Devers would go on to say, and I think what clearly showed his motive, was he further revealed when he said, I think the front office should do their job. Now this is me paraphrasing because we don't have time to run the entire Devers interview, but he said they should go out and do their job and find somebody who plays that position. So he did put more of the impetus on the front office. He didn't like the idea of him being asked mid-season to learn how to play first base. Now, can we all agree, first off, when he says, I don't think it's fair for them to ask me to learn one position and then change in the middle of the year? Does anybody think learning to play DH is learning to play a position? Listen, you've hit your whole life, Rafael Devers. Now, we can all have a discussion about, is it more difficult to be a DH where you're not involved in the field and you only get to maybe go out and swing the bat four times? Is that more difficult to do when you're used to playing the field. I'll agree with you there, yes. But nobody's asking you to learn how to play DH. They're just saying, go hit like you've always done, and maybe if your numbers are a little bit in decline, that's a trade-off they're willing to make because your defense has been so horrific at third base. So let's not pretend like learning to play DH is a huge thing. Should he be willing to play first base? I would say, you know what? Probably not a terrible move if a team has already extended you to a $300-plus million deal. If they ask you for the what might be in the best interest of the team to consider playing first base, which I think most people would agree is the one of the least taxing positions in all of baseball, I don't think it's a terrible, outrageous request by the organization to say, hey, you want to go take some ground balls at first base and see how it works? It might help us as a team to get the most out of our lineup. I don't think that's an outrageous request. And I find it fascinating that John Henry, the Red Sox owner, had to fly to Kansas City yesterday to have a conversation with Devers about this whole ordeal. It's something I'm fascinated about. We'll be watching it throughout the season, and we'll talk more about it, I'm sure, on future White Sox weeklies, because I'm not sure Rafael Devers is going to be a member of the Boston Red Sox for the entirety of his extension, his 10-year extension that he signed a couple off seasons ago. All right, we'll get back to some White Sox talk, though. Scott Merkin's in the booth. He's going to join us next here on White Sox Weekly. 312-332-3776. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Join us Saturday, June 7th, as the White Sox take on the Royals at 3:10 p.m. Get here early for Sox Crawl, Taste of the Sox, presented by Blue Moon, and enjoy an exclusive pregame crawl inside the stadium with Jack McDowell, autograph signings, food and drinks, sneak peek of new offerings, entertainment, and more. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxCrawl. I'm Jeff Meller here at Wright Field as we get set for game number 2 of 3 here between the White Sox and Marlins. And that can you hear in the background is a Diet Coke for my man Scott Merkin, fresh off of his return from Charlotte. If we knew, Scotty, that all it was going to take to get Tim Elko back was back up at the majors here was to send you down to Charlotte, would have sent you 3 weeks ago. Sox fans would have paid for your reimbursement to down to Charlotte. What's going on, man?
After that much, good to see you, even though we just saw each other about an hour ago in the clubhouse. When I wrote that story about Tim on, I guess it ran Wednesday afternoon first time, I got a lot of fans who suggested that I bring him back, and he's lucky he didn't fly back Thursday night. I flew home Thursday night, and there was a horrible storm in Charlotte, so everything was delayed. Oh. Like, I was supposed to be on a 10:50 flight that ended up not leaving till 1:30. Luckily, I got moved up to 8:30, and that left at 11:15. So it was so good for him that he got called up before Friday's game and had a normal flight in. But you know, one thing I will say about a couple things I'll say about Tim. Everyone you talk to just raves about his personality, him as a person. There's not a person you can find. It's like the old saying, like, if you don't get along with Tim, you probably should look at yourself type of thing, you know? And then, you know, what are the minor leagues basically for? They're for you learn the game, you prepare for your opportunity in the major leagues, you hope, you know, if you're on that level, and then you earn the right to go up there. And that's what Tim has done. Now, what Tim did, and it has been amazing this year, I'm sure the International League pitchers are glad to see him up with the White Sox now, does not mean he's going to come up and hit 350 with 10 homers and 35 games for the Sox. It doesn't predicate anything. It just means that you got that chance, he earned the chance, and it's good that they're getting. And let's remember also, great college player. As I joked with him before the game, one of the few players on this team who has a statue in his honor in Oxford, Mississippi, before he even did anything at the major league level.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's – but he was like a 10-3. He was a 10th-round pick. He's 26 years old. That's above the quote-unquote age for a prospect. But he's done everything he had to do to get here, and now he's getting his chance. So it's kind of a cool story. And not kind of. It is a cool story. Yeah.
Scott Merkin joining me here on White Sox Weekly, covers the White Sox, you know, for MLB.com. Has done so for a long, long time, so he knows this team inside and out. And I read your article, and so talk a little bit about Elko and the work he did in the offseason, and to your point about him being a 10th-round pick and how, you know, the organization – gets a little bit of a pat on the back for helping him develop, you know, to where he's at. But what has he done to make the improvements to help him attack the pitches in the zone that maybe he wasn't able or always doing necessarily at the level that the White Sox were hoping for?
Well, I think it's just kind of a focus thing, right? He's not striking out as much. He's not chasing as much. I saw him
in the game Tuesday night at Charlotte's, what's it, Truist? They're all like Truist Park, I think, out there. And it's a really nice stadium, by the way. If you have a chance to go out there, I would say if you have a chance to go to spring training, do it. Mm-hmm. If you have a chance to go to Charlotte, if you're a Sox fan, and Kannapolis, I think make it to Winston-Salem, go do it. But I think they attacked him in that game with 16 sliders. I think the word was out that, you know, don't challenge this guy. He's going to take you 400 feet deep.
Yeah.
And to his credit, he laid off most of them. You know, not everyone is perfect.
Yeah.
And even he said in the story that there are some days where you're not seeing it well, and yeah, you just miss. I mean, he's not going to be perfect up here. Trust me. No one is when they come up here. And, you know, he laid up pitch, and that made him more dangerous on the pitches he's focusing on in the zone. He had a double, a single, and two walks in that game. He had two more hits the next day. So he's just been very consistent in terms of, you know, focusing on the pitches in the zone to hit and not expanding the zone too much, which I guess is a key thing for every young player. But for a guy with Tim's potential, and we've seen it in spring training. You know, the last 2 years, he's homered on both opening games at Sloan Park, yeah, against the Cubs. So you see what he can do. He's a big dude, and I think that's just made him a better hitter overall. I think he's always been a pretty good hitter. You look at his numbers in Mississippi, you know, he was a leader. He was, you know, led them to a national title. You look at his numbers in the minors, they're almost all very good. And I think he's just taken that to another level and refined his craft. And again, he thanked a lot of people. He thanked Ryan Fuller. He thanked the hitting coach at Charlotte. And, man, his name is blanking on me. And Sergio Santos, the manager down there, you know, and the Sox in general.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, you don't do it alone. But I think he deserves a lot of credit. He deserves a lot of credit because it's very easy to look at that and say, not that this is a bad thing, but you're going to be an organization guy. You, yeah, know, you may get a call at some point for a short time, but you're going to be a guy who gets at bats and helps the team and helps younger guys in Charlotte probably, or, yeah, Birmingham or whatever. And he, you know, from the time he was in Mississippi, had target in the major leagues, and now he's here.
Yeah, no, he's forced his way. He's forced the issue.
He has.
He's earned the call. And, you know, I think, you know, it's very possible, had he not done what he did to start the season the way he did on fire, that I think it definitely would have been well within most people to think, hey, maybe the trade deadline, we'll see what happens with,
right,
the roster. Maybe after the trade deadline you could consider a call. But I think with the lack of offense at the major league level and him just absolutely going out and raking, he's definitely kind of forced the issue a little bit.
It's tough because the Sox play a lot of matchups, right? They, yes, do a lot of matchups against who's pitching and everything else. And you have Tim and Vaughn, and you still have that, Andrew Vaughn, who play the same spot.
Yep.
And, you know, I know we saw Andrew in the outfield a few times. We saw him at second base in one game. And he worked, I believe, the COVID year, did some work at third base, too. I don't think he's going to any of those spots.
Sure.
So you're kind of limited when you have them both up on this roster that you have first base or DH for both or either of them. And as Will Venable pointed out pregame today, you have Miguel Vargas, who can play over there at first base, too. So you never know. They're going to kind of mix and match. But I think Tim's going to get a look. I don't think this is kind of like a 2 week stint and see how he does. I think Tim's going to be here for the duration, and they're going to, you know, I don't know if they're going to play him 15 games in a row, but it's not going to be just one start and then a few pinch hits here and there. But yeah, I mean, bring him up, you were limited on the roster. They knew what he was doing. They knew the fans wanted him up here. This is kind of a way of the rebuild, right? When you have a prospect who gets, or a young player who gets hot, you want to see him get that chance, and, yeah, now he's got it. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. If he had the same kind of numbers as last year, which were very good, would that have forced the issue as much? Probably not. But you almost couldn't not promote him. Double negative there at this point for what he's doing.
Scott Merkin joining me here on White Sox Weekly, ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I was joking via text with your brother Randy the last couple days. He's a good guy.
Hope he's doing well.
Great guy. but I think there was some sour grapes here from him because he was questioning the selection of the Pope, and I think part of it was because a organization on the north side has a little bit of egg on their face from the way they rolled out that, hey, he's a Cubs fan. No, in fact, he's a Sox fan. Just what are your thoughts about the White Sox embracing Pope Leo XIV, and have you dug into whether or not he took 14 for Konerko?
I have not dug into that. I do not know yet. I'm investigating whether he subscribes to my newsletter.
Okay. I hope so.
I don't know if he follows me on Twitter. My Instagram's private, so I don't think he follows me on Instagram. but, you know, God bless the man. I hope everything goes well for him.
I think God has blessed the man.
But good for him. Good that he's a Sox fan. But I do need to find out if he's subscribing to the newsletter, because I'll be happy to make him the center topic of a newsletter anytime that he's available, because I get that he's got kind of a busy schedule
yes.
out there. So,
but like, you know,
now, I don't have a passport, so I can't go to Vatican City to interview him. So it'd have to be when he makes a trip to the, or we do it by Zoom too.
Yeah,
I suppose.
That, there you go. And it feels like he is probably going to have a little less time to lock in and watch every pitch of the White Sox going forward. So like, reading your newsletter would be a good way to make sure.
Why not? He should be doing that already if he's a Sox fan, right? Come
yeah,
on.
I was going to say, for all the Sox fans out there.
And we'll
there.
See his Chicago connection with the Bulls lottery coming up.
Yeah.
The Bears seem to be, at least personnel-wise, in good position. So let's see how his fandom – I assume he's fans of all those coming from – now, he grew up in Dalton.
Dalton, yeah.
And my brothers, Randy and Jeff and I, and our parents, of course, they were there too, grew up in Flossmoor, mm-hmm. which is about – 20 minutes or so from Dalton.
Yeah.
And we attended home in Flossmoor. Thornridge is the big high school, or it was, at least. I'm not sure how if it's changed at all in Dalton. And working for the Star Publications right out of college, I covered a lot of prep events at Thornridge High School. So I'm not sure if I ran into him at some point or not, but you know, I did see he's a big Aurelius fan, and that is
yes.
like we are not originally from the South Suburbs. We moved there from Chicago. But if you're born in Homewood or Flossmoor, that's like a birthright. It's like
yes.
high school basketball in Indiana. You must go to Aurelio's, and you must love Aurelio's if you're from the South. And it's very good pizza.
Yeah. And of all the things your brother texted me about, that was one of them. Pope Aurelio's.
Yes. Yes.
Definitely.
I mean, that's, trust me, I'm sure the South Suburbanites who I grew up with
mm-hmm.
are
yeah.
happier about that picture than any fandom, because Aurelio's is like a religion in the South Suburbs. It really is.
It's been a fun 48 hours here
yes.
for Sox fans, no doubt about it. Scott Merkin joining me for another moment here. Before I spring you, Shane Smith on the mound. He's been a revelation, really nice find for them, the first overall pick in the Rule 5 draft this year. And I think, if the research I've done is correct, has a chance to be the first ever player to make an all-star team the year he was selected.
How about that?
In the Rule 5 draft. I mean, I'm looking at the White Sox roster. I mean, as long as he continues kind of just doing what he's doing, I think he's kind of going to be the obvious choice.
Barring a change in their fortunes,
yeah.
you know, what are we, May 10th, right?
Yes.
The All-Star, so the All-Star pick's a little less than 2 months away, but the voting comes a little before that.
Yeah.
I would think he's, you know, usually a team that has like one or two or
yeah.
one, they take a pitcher
mm-hmm.
because they can give you innings in the game if need be.
Yeah.
Unless someone else stands out, obviously.
Sure.
But like you said, I think it's another great story, and I think it's a testament. That one where I think Elko is as much a testament to Tim as it is the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one's also a great story for the Sox. Now, granted, they had the first pick in the Rule 5. You can't go wrong because you don't have anyone blocking
sure.
you. You have the
yes.
pick. But that was a research effort done by everyone, from personnel to analytics, the front office, and they nailed it. I mean, again, we're just in May 10th.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he looks – we'll see how – I think he wants, just from listening to him and talking to him, he wants to start going deeper in
yes.
games. And I think they've been careful on that early on. They're going to manage his innings, but – he's got good stuff, and even Pat Murphy was saying that, you know, the changeup has made such a huge difference in his repertoire from what the little he remembered him in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting note, though, that he could be the – I mean, if put it this way, if the voting were today, Shane Smith
yeah.
would be the White Sox All-Star,
yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
But
we
a little time still, but
sure.
as of May 10th, he is the guy.
Yeah, clear win for the organization so far.
Yes, sir.
Scott Merkin, he covers the White Sox for MajorLeagueBaseball.com. Subscribe to his newsletter if
that's
you're
right.
a Pope or just a White Sox fan. You'll love the information you're getting. Scott, as always, thanks for popping on.
Thanks
Sox
for having
Weekly.
Me, Jeff.
That is Scott Merkin. Hey, Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to attend Chicago's hottest summer events. This month's winner will receive two tickets to Lollapalooza and Riot Fest, plus two tickets to Flo Rida postgame concert presented by Coca-Cola on June 27th at Wright Field. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. We'll let you hear from the man of the hour, Tim Elko. He met the media in the clubhouse earlier today. We'll let you hear what he had to say coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. Be here on Friday, June 27th, to see artist Flo Rida perform a post-game concert presented by Coca-Cola after the White Sox game take on the Giants at 6:40. Don't miss your chance for an up-close on-field experience. Exclusive on-field passes are on sale now with limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. Happy Tim Elko Day, all you White Sox fans out there. The man who is making his Major League Baseball debut met the media earlier today, and this is what it sounded like.
I got told before the game yesterday and got to head out and
catch a flight and get to Chicago. So it's been pretty fun just getting texts from friends and family. And you know, sorry if I haven't responded to some people, but it's been awesome. So just thankful for everybody and for the opportunity, and ready to go.
You told me the other day that, you know, attention doesn't really, off-field attention doesn't really matter to you because you're focused on what you're doing. But did you get a kick out of, like, the fan support, the desire to have you up here and playing for the White Sox?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, yeah, I try to stay off social media as much as I can, but you know, I saw some of the stuff on Twitter. It was pretty cool, and you know, to have support like that's a pretty cool feeling.
Were you able to sleep last night?
I was. I got a pretty good night's sleep, so I'm feeling energized today and ready to go.
Mark brought up kind of the fan attention, and obviously they see the numbers, but what are they getting in you is in terms of a player, in terms of a person?
Yeah, just somebody who cares about winning, cares about their teammates, wants to do anything I can every single day to help us win. Always going to give it 110%, and should be the best teammate and player I can be for this organization.
When do you think it'll hit you that you're a big leaguer?
It kind of already has. You know, yesterday when I was getting on the plane, and my first time flying first class, and I was kind of like, dang, I guess I'm going to the big league. So, no, it's, you know, just getting here and seeing all the guys again, and, you know, I've already got so many buddies up here, so that makes it a little easier. But, yeah, it's starting to hit me now, and excited to run out on the field tonight.
What's it going to be like to put on the uniform, to go out on the field, and feel the whole atmosphere?
Yeah, it's going to be an honor, put on the White Sox uniform and, you know, just be by my brothers and playing baseball. It's going to be an honor and a lot of fun.
What conversations with Will been like so far? Has he kind of laid out some expectations for you?
You know, I wouldn't say like a whole lot of expectations, but just, you know, get here, keep doing what I'm doing and play hard and, you know, kind of read some of our team goals and, you know, that kind of stuff is super cool. You know, Will seems like an amazing manager, and I'm getting to meet him a little bit in spring training, but I'm excited to play for him and play for this team.
Will you have family in the stands today?
Yeah, I'll have my my parents, my sister, my cousin, some of my dad's family as well, and a couple of my buddies from college will be here too.
There aren't many major leaguers who can say they already have a statue of themselves somewhere else. But when you were excelling in Mississippi, did you have this in your mind? I mean, it sounds like you're a guy who's focused on what you're doing, but in the back of your mind was you're like, I can take this, I can make a career out of this?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, always the goal is always to become a professional baseball player and play in the MLB, so, you know, it was always in the back of my head. But yeah, like you said, always just try to be where my feet are. So I was enjoying my time at Ole Miss and, you know, winning a national championship down there, and now it's time to help the White Sox win some games here.
What was today like just walking into the clubhouse as a major leaguer for the first time?
It was pretty cool. Rode over here with Cannon, and he's one of my good buddies, and yeah, just walking in, kind of seeing all the layout and everything, and just getting a feel for being here. It's a pretty cool feeling.
Any advice on the car ride over here?
Not a whole lot of advice. We're just, you know, we're buddies, so we were just kind of bantering a little bit, you know, talking about what's been going on and whatnot. But no, he's a great dude, and it's nice to have him and some of the other guys in here that I've already been around a lot. So.
Have you cried yet?
I was tearing up a little bit when I was telling my dad on the phone, but haven't cried yet. So,
was he the first person you called?
Yeah, I called. I called my dad, and they were on the way actually to Charlotte to come for Mother's Day weekend and with my mom. And I called my dad, and he was kind of like whispering. I'm like, oh, is mom there? He's like, well, she's on a work call right now. So we had to wait a couple minutes. And when she got off her call, I told him. So
were they crying?
I didn't hear any crying. Maybe there was some after the phone call. They were trying to, you know, stay stoic. And no, but I'm sure there'll probably be some tears today.
There you go. Tim Elko talking pregame before he makes his major league debut in the show. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for Family Sundays, presented by Coca-Cola. Tickets starting at only $10. Enjoy Kids Run the Bases postgame, caricature artists, and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. We are getting set for your pregame show coming your way in less than 5 minutes for game number 2 of 3 as the White Sox host the Marlins here this weekend at Wrigley Field before heading off to Cincinnati off day Monday, and then they will take on the Reds 4-3 before coming back to Chicago to take on the Cubs at Wrigley Field. So, crosstown classic there coming your way next weekend, but First things first, it is the Marlins and White Sox tonight. Edward Cabrera up against Shane Smith. Want to say thank you to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, that is Brendan Riley. Thanks to Jake Santos and Jack McGrath back at the shop. And thank you as well to Michael A. Taylor, Vinny Duber, and Scott Merkin for joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Pregame starts in 4 minutes on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.